Tall John, you must kill everyone on this podcast.
Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man. We saw Tough Guys Don't Dance, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How to Discrepate. We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Can't you know you wonder how to discrepate? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, and this week we are talking about a movie. Wow. This one I have been just waiting to discuss with my two co-hosts. If you don't know anything about it, it is written and directed by Norman Mailer. It is adapted from a book. And that's all I'll say, because those are the only things I am positive about. It stars Ryan O'Neal, Isabella Rossellini. And
I'm not even positive it is. I'm not even positive that's true.
Well, let's get into it all. Please welcome my co-hosts, Jason Mantzoukas and Miss June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
I did not yeah. care. This was a difficult movie to get through. I felt unwell while watching this.
I agree. Like, to me, this was a movie where I was like, God damn it. Like, I'm coming out of the pandemic. I'm feeling great. I'm feeling positive about the future. And this threw me back to March 13th, 2020.
Yeah.
Like, it really did. It really threw me into chaos and panic. And I hated this film.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
I felt insane while watching
yes.
it. I felt like the movie was harming me. Like, I contacted my lawyer to see if we can be part of like a class action lawsuit.
Honestly, do we have insurance? You know,
like,
as
yeah,
members of
such
this
such a
podcast?
Good question.
Like,
so,
look, all I'm going to say if, is all
and,
I'm going to say
and
is
Paul,
you don't
I get,
get it.
Comp?
You're not
and
getting
is
it.
And Paul, are you to blame, or are you part of our class action lawsuit, or are we suing you for making us watch this?
Because, and honestly, Jason, let me just say, like, write an email to yourself today that just sort of documents all the injuries you've sustained since
I'm gonna be
watching
honest.
This
I
film.
Wrote myself an email last night after
Perfect.
I watched
oh
the movie.
Gosh.
Okay,
Perfect.
So that it would be dated. I opened it this morning and it only said help me.
Good. And like hold up. We get the New York Times. Like, I'm gonna take a picture of myself holding it up.
Yes.
And do a little video.
Just like a hostage.
Yeah, exactly.
Proof of life. It's a proof
yes,
of life
I watched
video.
It last night, you know, and this is how I feel today. And
right
this is
now,
what's happened to me.
You two sound like a bunch of people on the Discord, like, oh, this movie, I didn't like it. People
never been on the
show
Discord.
Is called
Don't, I'm not aware never not
the
on
show
it.
Is called How Did This Get Made, not Thank God This Was Made. People are shocked when they're like, oh, this movie wasn't good. No shit, when did you check in on it? By the way, just so you both know, there is a Zoukas zone in the Discord where people just post memes of you, and there's a deep dive zone in there. So a lot of chat, a lot of things going on in there.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure there's I'm sure there's lots of great stuff going on the Discord. I just haven't
been
on it, especially if there's a bunch of complainers complaining about the choice.
Oh, they,
although,
well, people,
I might go on the Discord now to be part of the cacophony of voices saying, "Why did you choose this movie, Paul? Why did you make me watch this 1 hour
all,
and 50 minute
well,
tone poem
most...
of insanity?"
Angry about. And that's the thing, Paul. You know.
Yes,
you
Paul.
Know.
You know.
You know. Wow.
Yes,
I
Paul.
I can handle pretty much anything when it's
no,
an hour
not.
And 20 minutes.
Yes. Yes, I do
what
know that.
What I can't do and what I won't do is watch an hour and 56. This was a
well,
two
you took a weed gummy
week.
Before you started. So you really put you really put an obstacle in front of you. When you took that weed gummy, I looked at you and I was like, oh, well, this was also not.
And I don't know if this has, I think we've talked about this before, but this was also another one of those movies that for me, I was not enjoying it so much.
No.
And was so uncomfortable so often that I kept taking breaks.
That's right.
which only made it last longer. If I had just sat down and watched it start to finish, boom, I would have been done.
Jason,
but instead, it probably took me 3.5 hours to complete this movie.
For sure. I just finished it.
You are wrong. You are watching. This is a masterwork. A masterwork. I will say this.
Fuck Norman.
It reminded me very much of The Room, but I actually think The Room is much better than this.
I wrote the same thing. Yes. But
the
I mean,
room
I wrote
so
the
much
same
more
thing.
Enjoyable.
100%.
The Room is more enjoyable. The Room has like, if I'm gonna about to, I'm about to say something really wild.
Yeah.
The Room had a plot that was easier to follow.
1,000%. I was gonna say if you put like a blind taste test and said who made what movie, I would say, well, I think Norman Mailer
Paul,
made the
I'm not gonna
room.
Taste either of these movies. Please. If you're gonna distill these movies into a liquid, I am not putting either of them in my body.
Lick the bald scalp of
Ew.
Lawrence Turney. Here's what I'll say. I don't know if you
Please
all
never
do this.
Say lick the bald scalp again.
That's the t-shirt. Lick the bald scalp.
Oh, God.
All right. So here is.
By the way, isn't everybody glad the movie is over?
Oh,
like,
my God.
We don't ever
I had such
have to return
relief.
To it.
Me I was such watching relief. It by myself. And when it was over, I literally just sat in bed and had a moment with myself, with the film. And what happened in that meditative moment was that I came out stronger for it. Like, I was
okay,
like, I don't
see,
know what I
I'm
feel.
I'm going to ask you a question, Paul, because, Jason, mm-hmm. just so you know, yes, I did. I take a weed gummy before. Yeah, I did. And thank God, by the way, like, the injuries I would be sustaining now without that weed gummy, like,
Agree.
Thank God.
I feel like I, while watching this, went into, like, a disassociative state. Like, I feel like I went into, like, some sort of, like, fight or flight instincts were triggered, and I went into, like, I retreated into my interior life, into my mind, because I was
you know what,
so
Jason?
Unsettled by the movie.
So, this is what I was gonna say. Thank God I took that weed gummy, but, like, I sit there when Paul says it's time to watch the movie. I said, okay, let me get my journal out. Let me get a pen. Let me get my comfy cozies. And I'm going to sit. Let me take a weed gummy and I'm going to watch the movie. Now, Paul sits and he's checking Clipper scores. He's sometimes watching other videos.
Whoa.
He's doing
Whoa.
All manner of
what?
Thing. He's on.
What?
Maybe he's on Discord. He's responding to things.
He's on the Discord. Watching it right now, guys.
Looking up things, responding to people. And I'm on Instagram and I'm like, I don't know how you even saw the movie. And now I'm like, how did you watch the movie? And I don't think you did the work that Jason and I did.
I agree.
Which is sitting there and staring at it.
I bet Paul, like, didn't even look at the screen during the 5 minutes of empty New England streets and beaches that was the beginning
the
of
beginning
this
of
movie.
The film. Well,
now, he has an ability to, like, to multitask.
Yes.
I do not either.
I am
really
a very, I have a brain that can jump there. I think it's slightly defective brain, but it, that's where I am strong.
Yeah. The 1-2 punch that really made me scared was Canon Films.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
1 hour and 50 minutes. Whoa. Wait a minute.
Well,
you can't have a Canon Films movie that's this long. Canon Films movie has to be like 1 hour and 20 minutes
87,
max.
87 minutes is their sweet spot. I want to say one thing about this film and my experience with this film. After the first handful of minutes, when it was very clear to me that we were in for a wild ride,
Mr.
There was
Toad.
Mr. Toad.
Akin to Mr. Toad.
By the way, I just went on that this week with my two young boys. We had a great time on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. They didn't seem to mind that we went to hell, which is one of the darker rides in Disneyland, that you get hit by a train and then you go to hell.
Wow.
That is how the ride is.
So tacitly, one might understand in the context of the ride that you have passed away.
Yes, you do. You have been
so
you have been
it's
killed.
Forcing children to face their own mortality. Interesting choice for a ride.
I loved it as a child. They were like, oh, I can't wait to get to the hell part. I can't wait to die. Which
I'm surprised
dark,
that
as I
Disney
said that out loud.
Still has Mr. Toad's up. Like,
it's
that they have
only
replaced
at
it with,
Disneyland.
Like,
and it's only at Disneyland.
I've never been.
To Disneyland?
It's interesting.
Never been to Disneyland.
What?
Whoa.
Never been.
What?
Wow.
Sorry. Sorry. Guys, huge reveal in this episode.
Wow.
I've never been to Disneyland.
Have you been to Disney World?
As a child, we went twice.
Well, we got to go to Disney.
Oh, my gosh. We got to go
to Disney. I mean, we did that podcast festival.
Yes.
Technically, was that in...
That was in Anaheim. That was not at Disney, no.
Okay. Yeah. So then, no, I have not been to Disneyland because that's the only time I've ever been to Anaheim was for that
podcast festival. Is that like are you anti-Disney?
I'm not a big... I'll say this. I'm not a big theme park person in general.
Jason.
Six Flags, Disney,
it's not
Universal,
the same. It's not the same. It looks... Okay, Disney is its own thing. But first of all, I mean, we got to get you to Batuu.
Paul just got so animated. It was amazing.
I honestly thought you were going to end the podcast. I didn't know what was happening.
Say Six Flags and Disney in the same sentence.
I do agree with that. Now, listen, I have become a Disney person since being with Paul. Like, I started off, I think, probably where you are, Jason, which was like, oh, it seems like too much and it's a headache and there's so many people and so much going on. But I've kind of turned into a Disney person. And even before having kids,
That's what I was just going to ask, because I can totally understand and could see going with children being a very rewarding experience.
Yes.
You know,
it really is.
And like True. Very fun and infectious fun. I would love to go with kids to Harry Potter World or Galaxy's Edge or, you know, all that
you
stuff.
You would love Galaxy's Edge as an adult. You love Marvel's campus as an adult.
Thinking about it, going with like other adults or something like that, it just doesn't. Like I said, it doesn't interest me all that much. Theme parks in general.
But. So you don't like going on rides?
Not particularly. I mean, I will, you know, but
I want to change your mind. Okay. I want to change your mind on, because I think you would specifically enjoy some of the things at the Marvel campus.
I bet.
You would, you know, they have a Pim's food laboratory where everything is either very, very big or very, very small. But
I want some of that blue milk. I want some of that
blue milk.
Blue milk
is good. I think the green milk is a little bit better. Okay, well, there's so much to get into there. Here's what I was to say. Here's what I was to say to all of you, which is when I see a movie like this, the way I approach it is this. I can sit there and I can try to make sense of this film as if it is supposed to make sense. Or, and this is maybe a terrible analogy, but I'll say this. It's as if the plane is going down. And when they say, oh, everybody, make sure you buckle up because the plane is going down. I'm going to be like, let me unbuckle my seatbelt because there's no way I'm getting out of this. So let me flop around this cabin because I'd rather be shooting up and down.
You think you have a choice in that matter? So wait, you're going to unbuckle your seatbelt?
Yep. Yep.
But Paul, I just want to make sure you understand. Yeah. You might cause irreparable damage to other people in the plane.
I'm making a judgment call that we're all
all going down.
So why not die with my elbow
in a pinball machine?
Yes. Why? Like if the thing is in 25 seconds
insane.
We're all going to be dead.
Here's
why not just go out with some. I don't want to be like head into knees.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay.
Even though that might
that's
help
not
you survive.
Gonna save anything.
Here's I feel like when I watch these movies.
Like if Sully I wouldn't do it if like we were in a Sully situation.
But I don't think the pilots come on and say, hello folks. So we're in a Sully scenario. So we're going
to
be okay.
I'd be able to judge it.
We're in a all hope is lost. So feel free to unbuckle and pinball around the cabin. Well, like,
whatever way you want to go out right now, it's dealer's choice.
This is yours.
It's up to you.
We don't know. We don't know what they say.
You know what? We're declaring there are no rules. If you want to take your mask off, you can.
If the back of that fuselage popped off like in Lost, I'm unbuckling, baby. Let's go.
If you want to go in the bathroom barefoot, go right ahead, you monsters.
Now, here's what I'll say to you. If I saw we were going to nosedive and like a part of the plane was coming off, I would maybe take my chance in unbuckling and trying to fly out into the air.
Yeah.
Oh,
so that
whoa,
I understand.
I'm just saying,
June?
I'm not.
Wait,
okay, you
want
to hear the funniest
story? I thought June... I thought June and I were united in thinking Paul's choice was insane. And then June, you just said you think you might be able to fly out of the plane and fly in air, in space.
Who is Team Fred now? Who's Team Fred now? And who's Team Sanity?
Like, you think you might be able to Wonder Woman this?
Yes, if I could grab a couple blankets.
A blanket?
Wait, you think you're going to grab a couple blankets out and create a squirrel suit? A flying squirrel suit?
Yeah. Holy shit. If I knew we were like, okay, we're probably heading into like a nosedive. Like, there's no way this plane is landing. I might take my chances that way. Yeah.
Wow.
I might.
Wow.
So the funniest
Team Fred,
stories.
Team Sanity, come back up.
So Casey Wilson's dad told me once that, and then we'll get back to the movie eventually. But
do we need to? I'd rather have this conversation.
So she told me that there was her dad was on a flight from like DC to New York, really, really quick flight. And sometimes they fly low and hit a ton of turbulence. There was a storm. There's a guy in a business suit who's sitting there. Now, the flight attendants can't get up, and it's a short flight, but he's having a full-on panic attack and gets up out of his seat, unbuckles like Paul, and just starts heading toward the exit door, screaming, I gotta get out of here.
Gotta get out of here.
Oh, no.
And the flight attendants and other passengers have to restrain him to the ground.
Wow.
And there's a flight attendant that keeps on screaming at him like, sir, you're on a plane. Like, there's nowhere to go. But he was just fully in a panic spiral, screaming. Wow.
I'm being much more deliberative.
That's what I feel like I would be like at Disneyland. I feel like I would be running towards exit screaming, I got to get out of here.
So listen, it is hard to go during the pandemic now because there's no real refuge. Like there's I only go to Disney because the way Paul does Disney, and Paul has an energy level that's not normal for
Tell him how I took the kids. What did I do with the kids?
Well, so we went the first day we went and it was really fun. We came back from our vacation and the kids thought they were going home and we like left LAX and surprised them by turning into Disney. So they were just like
so cool.
Stunned. Really and it fun. Was really, really special. But so we get there that night. The next morning we wake up and it's like, we're going into the park.
Yeah.
But we stay at the, what is it called? Grand California.
Yeah, Grand California. Yeah.
And it's like a nice hotel at Disney, but I need that space to go back to.
Right. You need what the kids need, like or what younger kids need at Disney, like a nap time. Like you've like,
you've seen too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do. And I need to be nap, in like a quiet room, dark room and be quiet.
I felt like, and I didn't say this to you in real life, but I'm going to say it to you now on the podcast and see how this lands.
But this, to be clear, like, this is real life.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That I felt like you co-opted our youngest to enjoy that trip where he may not have needed that, retreat, but I feel like he was caught up in it. Cause the next day when I was with him, he said to me multiple times, I'm not tired.
Well, maybe that's because, so the next day I did one day and then I came back cause I had something to do and I left really early in the morning. Paul took the kid by himself for Disney and like literally left the hotel room at like 9 a.m. and they got back to our home, never went back to that hotel room at like 10. Okay.
What?
And
so wait,
but
that's
I did
two
see
days
Paul,
in the park or just the one?
Two days in the park.
But Paul did a full day in the park with him by himself and they never went back to rest. Now, I also feel I'm going to say this about men in general, and I know this is a generalization, but men don't appreciate rest as much as women
do. I buy that. Yes, I do.
So
I'll be honest. I love that rest, baby.
I think maybe you're different, Jason, but I need to. There's only so much kind of public facing I can do, and then I need to go get quiet.
Yeah. No, I need to shut it down.
I need to shut myself down.
And June was going to laugh real hard here, but I believe myself to be an introverted extrovert. My want is to be.
An introverted extrovert?
Yes. My want is to be back home. My want is to, but when I'm out, I'm like, well, now I'm out. Now I'm going to go out. But when I'm out and I feel like a little tinge or pull, I'll pull the ripcord. I fight with that a lot internally, like going home versus going out.
Oh, but by the way, this is why I think our youngest didn't need a rest. Cause Paul sent me a picture of him, from like his day alone with the boys at breakfast time, and they were sitting outside a Starbucks, and he was drinking basically like a brownie sundae.
It was a chocolate milk. It was a chocolate milk.
Of course, he's not tired. He's high as a kite.
He's having a red eye.
Yeah.
It's chocolate.
Anyway, Jason, I am curious what you'd think of Disney, and it would be fun to go, you know, on an.
Well, maybe
off.
We can do it for the show somehow.
That would
I would love. We'd bring a recorder, and we'll take breaks every like hour or so, and we could check in. I would love to do that. Now, what I was saying with my airplane analogy was, I think a movie like this really pays off much bigger dividends if you are. Dipping in, dipping out, feeling like I don't need to understand it, because when you loosen yourself into it, like if I try to make sense of this, I'm going to be beside myself.
I was as
myself.
Loose as I could get.
Well,
Paul.
See,
I
know here's, you were, but you here's get sleepy, my, though, too. My feeling is I try and meet the movie on its terms.
Okay.
Mm. You know what I mean? Like knowing my expectations with the movies that we do are that things are going to be wrong, off, weird, whatever. So I try and come to it being like, my expectations are that's what's in store for me.
Right.
This movie though was so uncomfortable and so unsettling that I couldn't, to be inside of it felt awful.
Well,
to be inside of this Provincetown world, this New England world that looks like my hometown, that looks like places and things I know, and then have it be full chock full of the broadest Southern accents I've ever heard in my life. Like, how many deep South people?
Like chalk?
Chock full?
And I was also like, well, you said this movie is chalk. And I was like, yeah, that it is chalk.
It is
this
chalk.
This movie is
And I don't know
chalk.
Why it is,
no,
but it is.
The whiteness.
It's
I would
chalky.
Say all these performers oddly look alike. Like, there
they
was moments
do.
Where I was, yes. there were moments where I was like,
wait. Agree.
I was like, the cop kind of looks like the other husband, and Ryan O'Neill kind of looks at the cop. And at one point I was like, is that even Ryan O'Neill? I'm not even sure anymore. I will say this,
I just
though.
Know I don't like any of them. That's all I know.
If you told me they shot this movie over the course of 11 years, I would believe you, because sometimes they look young, sometimes they look old. Like there's no consistency. Like the scenes in which he's talking with his father and recounting the events of the movie, like there's
flashback
a spine
sequence number
yeah, there's
one.
A spine of the movie where Ryan O'Neill, present tense Ryan O'Neill, is sitting talking to his father, and they are just flashing back, which is the body of the movie is these long flashbacks.
Is it though? Because then we get caught up to
then
that
we catch
time
up
and we
to
got
it.
About
yes.
45 more minutes left. To the
exactly.
movie.
Yes. The third act is that is present. Yes.
But there are flashbacks in the flashbacks as
yes.
well.
Yes.
And oh but God, here's oh the one God. Thing.
I wrote again. That down. When they flash back to he's a bartender.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
Oh no, a flashback inside of a flashback? Fuck this movie.
This
also
what,
multiple voiceover narrators. Multiple narrators.
Here's the thing. Oh, God damn. There's so much here. Cause like I did say, this is a, you know, it's directed by Norman Mailer, who is a, you know, a Pulitzer Prize winning author. I've read multiple Norman Mailer, books and amazing. Right. But this is a book that he wrote. So he adapted it. So you would think that he would have the best handle on this material. Robert Towne, who wrote Chinatown, comes in, consults on this. You think
produced by Francis Ford Coppola.
You think at any point someone would say, hey,
this
we don't
this movie
understand
was
the plot.
Francis Ford Coppola.
This movie was produced by Francis Ford Coppola.
Zoetrope.
I mean, just in the credits, I saw that.
This movie premieres at Cannes.
Wow.
Like, yeah, this movie premieres at Cannes out of competition, but so I guess that doesn't count. But can I just show you?
Not in the same, it doesn't have the same weight, but even still, that's fucking nuts.
When it premieres at Cannes, the reaction is not good. And so all of a sudden.
Yeah. You think?
Sure.
Wow.
So this is how America met this film. So this is the trailer. Anyone can call pause at any point, but I want to show you the trailer for this film, because I think I've never seen anything like this, and we'll roll it right in. Here we go.
I just received the comment cards from the first screening of my new film, Tough Guys Don't Dance. Bold, innovative, wonderful. Stinks.
Why are we talking about that?
We can't let it hang out here. Where else can we?
A movie not to miss. giant death orgy with lots of maniacs.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Something rotten has happened.
One of the best and most original films I've ever seen.
It was brilliant.
One of the worst ever. My grandmother could do better.
I agree. You agree on what?
Excellent, crazy entertainment. Very funny. Gross, sleazy, garbage.
It was no small job.
Quick turns of plot. Enjoyed having to think. Whoever wrote this has never read a good book.
You think it's simple? Well, here, go ahead. You pull the trigger.
You're being set up.
Set up for what?
Murder one.
Wow.
So Norman Mailer basically sets up his own movie by saying, like, I don't know. Like,
I like that he embraced like the negative reviews and made it part of the like the promotional campaign because yeah. It is. I agree with all the negative reviews and what they. It does stink. It is. Whoever wrote it hasn't read a good book. I don't know. It was this movie. This movie is Ryan O'Neal and then a bunch of people who are basically doing a Blanche DuBois impression from Streetcar Named Desire.
This is the one thing I wanted to say early on, but I think it's a perfect time now. When I write, what I often do is I keep open another document, and as I'm cutting through things, I will cut things out of like a document and I'll throw it into like a junk bin file, like, just in case I want to go back to it. And what this whole script felt like was like Tennessee Williams' junk bin for Streetcar Named Desire. Like, it was sort of like, this is all lines that could have felt like, it was so
weird. Well, the majority of the
noir, I mean, it's infuriating. Like, it was just infuriating. And I got to tell you, fuck Norman Mailer. I think that guy's a homophobic, sexist, fucking maniac. I am so
Gene, did you get that from the
and racist. And racist and homophobic.
All sorts of
like
things.
All
sorts of things. It's all on display in this film.
From the jump.
This opening scene with his dad.
Your hair. Yeah. It went quick. Chemo must be bad.
Yeah, I quit. The nausea was a disgrace.
Well, what are your chances, big fella?
Yeah, son. Who the fuck can say? I handle everything but the middle of the night. Where's your wife?
Patty Lorraine took off November 1st, 28 days ago.
You married the wrong girl, that's all. You should have married the other one.
I thought you liked Patty Lorraine.
I liked her guts. But certain dames ought to wear a t-shirt that says, hang around, I'll make a cocksucker out of you.
Thanks.
I mean, that introduction, it's like, it feels like people were getting into fistfights in between takes of this movie. Like that.
Okay,
like it felt
so
like, yeah.
Can I talk about something?
Yes.
Now I want to talk about something, and just because you showed the Norman Mailer reviews thing that is pretty great. There is, everybody can find it on YouTube. Norman Mailer made another movie called Maidhead.
What?
That stars a young Rip Torn, okay?
I thought this was
And there is footage. There's a 10-minute clip on YouTube that we will maybe link to or you can find. Just Norman Mailer, Rip Torn, Google it on YouTube or YouTube search it. And it is footage. It's behind-the-scenes footage that is being shot while they're shooting a scene. Rip Torn has lost his mind, and he attacks a shirtless Norman Mailer. He attacks Norman Mailer with a hammer. And hits Norman, and all their families are around because all their families are there shooting. They're out in a field. He attacks Norman Mailer with a hammer. And then Rip Torn is like, I'm you. Yeah, yeah. And Norman Mailer at a certain point is kind of like, I gotta admit, this is exactly what the character would have done. like, they're so inside of this kind of craziness. There are children crying, screaming, no. They've just watched their father be attacked by a Rip Torn who looks like he's... It looks like documentary footage from like a true crime story. Rip Torn looks like a deranged murderer. He's holding a hammer, bloodied from hitting Norman Mailer in the head with a hammer. It's fucking nuts.
Oh my
so
God.
Here's Norman Mailer is shirtless. Rip Torn, that's Rip Torn.
Norman.
No, baby. You know, you trust me.
You trust me. Come on.
I'll trust you if you trust me.
All right. All right.
Promise?
Promise.
All right. Okay, I go.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry, Dad.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
No, please get up. No. Let me hit you.
No, no.
What? No.
Hey! Will you cut this fucking thing out?
Okay, this is amazing. It's 10 minutes long. That movie had 45 hours. They had a 45-hour cut that they had to get down to 110 minutes. And someone was shot on that movie, and yet they financed him for another movie.
They financed Rip Torn, there's a part of it where Rip Torn's going, "You're not Mailer. I'm Mailer. I'm you. I'm you, Daddy." And it is, and his eyes are, it is terrifying.
Oh my God. I thought this was his one and only.
No.
Although, are there any more? I actually don't know.
I think it's this one because he got a bunch of Razzies for this one.
Razzies were already, how long have the Razzies been around?
1987. So this is the year where Ishtar.
So this is later than I thought. I thought this was earlier.
This is the year it was nominated for 7 Golden Raspberry Awards. It won Worst Director, but it tied with Elaine May for Ishtar, which I think if you go back, you'll find that Ishtar was unfairly maligned for whatever reason. It's actually a fine, if not a capable film in many ways.
It got cooked for reasons that were not necessarily valid. It is a perfectly good movie. It just was very expensive.
That's what it was. But this movie starts in a weird way because you said it's like 10 minutes of the scenes, but then it starts with a home invasion that we don't necessarily hear. Like, it's like, I guess not a home invasion, but like there's a moment, or I guess.
Oh, you mean when his dad comes?
Well,
with
the
tea kettle?
Yes. So I guess it's a weird thing to start a film with a noise where your character enters into it because I feel like the tension is, I've just come, whatever it is, I just woke up, or like it immediately jumps into a very weird narrative switch. That's when I knew I should unbuckle my safety belt and just start ping ponging around here because I was like, okay.
Well, yeah, because so what happens is we start with Ryan O'Neill in bed. He hears the tea kettle going off, whistling.
Which doesn't seem odd because...
Which is not a scary sound, but he picks up a crowbar nonetheless and starts creeping through. And what you realize later is the last 5 days have been a series of like physical attacks that he's been through with various people. So later we understand why he was nervous that someone was in the house. But right now we have no idea what's going on.
In the language of film... To have someone waking up to a tea kettle going off, that would be the normal thing, right? Yes.
Well, like, not if you lived alone.
Yeah.
But we don't know anything about this
character. We don't know any of that.
I'm saying the first image we have of him is waking up in a bed. Like, he could be married. This could be a comedy. We don't know anything. So just having someone in a bed with a tea kettle going off, like if a window smashed, I mean, get it. But it's like, it's...
I could talk forever about the house party where his wife plays the trumpet, the seance.
By the way, this was shot in Norman Mailer's house.
I mean, of course it was. I'm not surprised even remotely to hear that. I wrote, this movie is bizarre. The room makes more sense. Like, what is this story? He goes, what Ryan O'Neill says about his wife at one point, she was the largest addiction of my life. And he's a guy who like goes to prison for selling coke. Is like, there's more coke done in this movie than I think in Bright Lights, Big City. This is absolute insanity.
I was also like confused. I want to talk about the heads, the women's heads that were buried in a forest under
a one
rock.
Woman and one man, right?
See, no, that's what I want to talk
heads,
about. I think both
the two heads were the women.
Heads.
Yes.
Wait, what happened to the old man
heads?
Then?
The man was killed as well,
but
I don't think he was decapitated.
Yes. So his body's just in the trunk rotting.
Correct.
Oh.
Yes. So
and then the two women were decapitated.
But at one point, Jason, and I think clearly Paul was a little confused about this too.
Well, because we now know he's barely watching the movie.
Yeah,
guys,
like,
I'm in. I know it's
he was
the
like,
whole...
And I was confused when the Clippers showed up.
And
Kyrie was there. I don't know. I don't know.
Hopefully, God, only if we'd be so lucky.
So I knew there was blonde hair on the first head and he was freaked out, right? So he left that head there. Got that. Because it could have been either head.
then he later is saying to himself, whose head was it? Whose head was
it? Well, he's not saying it to himself, Jason. That voiceover is a woman's voice saying, whose head is that? Whose head is that?
Oh, is that what it was? I'm sorry. Yes. You're right. Because there is. There's lots of, exactly what June just did. There's lots of like whispering in the soundtrack.
Well, I mean, who's cackling at the end of the film? We'll never know.
Yeah.
Because this is like a straight up ghost movie. But is this a thing? I know we've talked about this on the show and people have referenced this a bunch. Like, we talked about this idea, like when you're a kid, you find porn in the woods and that was how you would find like a porno magazine or something like that. But in this, was it a thing to hide your drugs like in a little like...
I was going to say, because it's just marijuana he's hiding there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a coke dealer. Like, we know, I don't know where the cocaine was, but it doesn't seem to be protected the same way that marijuana
Here's what I never understood. They seem to intimate repeatedly that Ryan O'Neal is the cocaine connection, that they have the money and that they're saying he's going to be the guy that gets the coke. But I never see the movie never shows him as that go-between. And
never.
It seems like they're setting him up to take the fall. Well,
I think that they're setting him up to be the take the fall because they have in with the coke dealers. And the big plan was to sell like $2 million of coke to get $10 million of money or they're running.
No, they had the money. They had $2 million from that Southern guy. Again,
right.
Provincetown is populated entirely by people from the Deep South.
I was going to say, is this a town that is populated by character actors from community theater? Because everyone in this movie, I mean, that's Southern accent.
The Southern guy, the richy rich Southern guy who's like, you don't understand. It's it's hard to be have it $2 million. What am I going to do?
Baby, what do you want to do, baby, about it for the thing? I was like, we got to play a clip of that woman. That woman playing the woman who talks about her vaginal hair and playing a trumpet.
To be clear, she does not. Does she say vaginal?
No, I didn't want to say pussy.
She says
yeah.
Pussy
okay.
hair.
Yeah, all right. I was trying to be classy.
I think, I'll be honest. Vaginal hair is
way worse.
A million times
it's
worse.
It's really a lot worse. When you get more clinical
with
it,
pubic hair.
It's just...
I should have said pubic hair, yeah. vaginal hair is not even really a thing.
Lady, you sound like a witch.
Well, honey, I am a witch. Good blondes are.
You're not a real blonde.
My pussy hair was bright gold in high school. Until I went out and... scorched in with the football team.
That party where she goes, the doorbell rings, she goes, that must be my boyfriend, and just takes off her outfit. People are ripping off their clothes like NBA stars ripping up their ripping off their warm-ups.
Yeah, everybody has rip-away clothing. It is, she strips just to answer the door because she says, it must be my boyfriend, and then it's not.
And like, Jason, is that the vibe? Like, this is what was interesting to me, too. Like, to me, that's not the vibe of that part of the country. Am I wrong?
The party was full of Southerners. So maybe they were bringing that Southern style to Provincetown is like, you know, the Cape, basically.
I always think of it as a bit more like upper crust and stiff.
Well, but that's why the seance made it sense, because they're into witches and stuff like that. They burned witches at the stake, right? That's why they're doing the seance.
That's not necessarily in that same area, but sure. it made no sense that they were in Provincetown. Like, it would have made much more sense to me if this movie was set in Savannah.
You know why it's in Provincetown? Because Norman Mailer's like, let's shoot at my house so I don't have to, like, go anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that makes total sense now that you say that. But it made no sense to me, like, how big and broad all the characters were. Drug dealers.
Also similar. Like, they were big and broad, but there was no, like, I couldn't really tell you the difference between, like, Penn Jillette's character as the preacher.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow.
The swinger preacher. And also, like, the main killer, I think, at the end. That guy, and then the police chief, like they all bled into each other.
The character that I wanted to see more of, who I thought was the most defined, was the adult film star who comes to town.
Well, she was incredible.
She's one of the women that's murdered, though.
But I mean, I feel like we didn't get enough time with her, and you get this amazing scene with her right at the get go.
Tell us a joke.
What makes surgeons happy?
What?
To cut people up and get paid for it. That's happiness.
You look like one of those method actors that plays a killer.
Don't say that.
Why not?
Because I could kill you. I feel demented tonight.
In what way demented?
I could fuck your woman right in front of you.
Only if the lady agrees.
Now, is that a real joke, or are they just all coked up? I don't...
I mean, it has the structure of a joke, but it is not, like, it's not inherently funny. The idea being, like, most people who cut people up, like, they're crazy murderers. But with surgeons, they cut people up and get paid for it.
But the way he told it, he felt like Christian Bale in American Psycho. Like, yes. He didn't tell it with any joy. It was like...
I don't know. I mean, and that's where I think the movie's trying to like fuck with us a little bit, where we're supposed to think like, oh, is he the killer? Like, did he do this?
Ryan O'Neal shouldn't even be in this town. He doesn't fit. Like, I don't buy him as this character. I don't buy him as a guy unzipping his pants. I don't buy any. Talk about miscast. Like,
I don't believe him as a coke dealer who goes to prison for 3 years.
No.
I don't believe him as the local marijuana dealer who's like kind of a gigolo. I don't believe in any of this. And I fundamentally don't believe in him as what he is, which is the Norman Mailer stand-in, writer. He's not Mailer-esque in any way, shape, or form. He's supposed to be a writer, you know, like that's his thing. He's a failed writer or whatever. Meanwhile, you've got the police officer who's married to Ryan O'Neal's ex-wife, who's played by Isabella Rossellini, who is, as always, incredible and just like fantastic, but has so little to do. And I feel terrible that she's like just kind of shunted around. But the speech that guy gives when he goes, I'm a law enforcement officer, and it turns me on. Like, everybody in this movie has a speech about how this thing, this horrible thing they do makes them horny. Like, oh, the other
movie
Patty
wants
Lorraine.
To fuck. I mean, this
Patty
movie
Lorraine,
is...
when she shoots the other blonde woman, gets like horny and they fuck afterwards. It's crazy.
That honestly, I have to say, that cuckolding scene was so disturbing to me, and not because it was graphic, and there are more graphic sex scenes, but just to have that man just crying like, why won't you listen to me? No one listens to me. Listen to me. Like, and it's like on the side of the, oh no, let me speak. It goes, let me speak. Let me speak.
He's crying.
why wouldn't he walk away? This movie is so, I mean, by the way, it's aggressively homophobic. I mean, like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, it is, like, it was kind of, like, jaw-dropping in that way. Like,
In a way that it felt like performative masculinity.
But that's Norman Mailer.
You know what I mean?
Like, that is...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's kind of, like, who I'm leveling that against. It's really, like, it's Mailer really trying... In the mouth of every character is homophobic to another character in some way, shape, or form.
But they would fuck them all. Every character would fuck each other, regardless of sex.
And most of them do, you know?
Yes, and what's hilarious about that to me is, like, Norman Mailer's giving... every character that platform, but also just so many characters. It's like, I feel like there were three extra characters that could have, like, there were three men in this movie who you could cut out and not miss at all. Like,
or
there
just
were just
collapse
so
them into
many
one.
Of them. Yes.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, absolutely. Well, here's the thing, too, that happens. Like, there's a scene in this movie where he gets in his Jeep. And he has a dog with him.
When does that dog come to play?
And then the dog shows up. In that scene, the dog is murdered. First of all, we're like more than an hour into the movie. When does he have a dog? We've never seen him have a dog yet.
And yet it seems like it's a John Wick moment.
Yes.
In the middle of the movie.
So he's like, you killed my, that's your knife. He says, that's your knife in my dog.
Oh my God.
I love that the guy, the Southern guy, Wardley.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, he just wants to throw sick parties. He's got a gun on Ryan O'Neal, and he's like, we're going to throw the biggest parties this world has ever seen. Like, his goal in getting rich off of the coke money is just to throw better parties.
I mean, look, not a bad goal. Not a bad goal at all. I mean, that dog. And by the way, the thugs rolling up in a white Rolls Royce, like these, like, first of all, not undercover at all. Nope. Aggressively, what car they were driving? Oh, a white Rolls Royce. Like, there's no.
I would also believe it if you said that was Norman Mailer's car. I would believe it if everything in this movie was just like his.
Oh my God. You know? He drove a white Rolls Royce.
I would 100% believe that. I wrote in my notes, I feel like I'm in an active blackout.
Oh, that's so terrible.
Wait, there are a couple things in here too, and maybe I don't want to be prudish, but the cop, when he's talking about his job and what he loves about his job.
You don't want to be prudish, said the man who said vaginal hair?
Vaginal hair. I don't want to be prudish, because I was trying to be very respectful of the vaginal. He wrote, I like two humps a day.
And, oh, yeah.
Like, he needs to fuck two. He goes, I fuck two women a day.
Two different women.
Yeah. So every day he has to fuck two different women. I guess
one of them is his wife, yes. Isabella Rossellini. And one is, we now know, is Ryan O'Neal's ex-wife.
And then doesn't Isabella Rossellini say at one point, like, I need to make out, or he likes to make out five times a day? Like, she also equates a number with how much they're.
Oh, I don't
like,
remember that.
I thought she had, like, a line where she says, like, he likes to make out five times a day.
Well, everybody in the movie, I don't know if you guys found this jarring either. Everybody in the movie monologues. Like, there's not a lot of, like, there's not a lot of back and forth. It's not conversational. Everybody is, like, tease someone up for a monologue, a proper, like, big, like let me tell you type of thing. And it's exhausting because none of it helps. Usually when a character monologues, it's an exposition dump. It's helping you understand information. It's giving you context or helping you ground the movie or whatever. But these monologues are fucking nuts.
Oh, they're
absolutely crazy. When that police officer then has a stroke or has a heart attack or his mouth is half paralyzed. Like, what the fuck was going on?
I don't know. And then were they killing him at the end? Was that like a mercy kill where they were like, this is no life? Let's.
I did rewind that section.
I couldn't quite understand that.
I rewound the section because I was like, I need to understand exactly what is going on here. And I believe, if I am correct, he hit his head into the wall so many times that he created his own stroke. Like, it's like, so if you bang your head against the wall enough times, you can have your own stroke. Because he goes, bang, bang, he's fine. Third bang, he's and he almost like he's getting
exactly
electrocuted.
What would happen to you, like, ping-ponging around an airplane after you unbuckle.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
who cares? I'm dead. I'm dead. And although that guy survived. He did survive. And the first thing he said was, I fucked better than you. Your womb is broken. Now, by the way, who cares if her womb is broken? Because he clearly doesn't want to procreate.
He had a picture with those two kids, his brother's children.
This is me. When he just holds up the...
So all of that shit was so weird. Also, and this was featured in the trailer that you played earlier, Paul, but I wanted to call it out. At the end, when Ryan O'Neal and his father are dumping all of the bodies into the ocean that are result of all of the many different crosses and double crosses that have happened in this movie, which are impossible to map because they don't make any sense, it is to pomp and circumstance.
Oh,
it is. They are only playing pomp and circumstance. Mm-hmm. It's as if they are graduating from high school. So today, graduates, as we go out into that great big world, we think to ourselves, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it seems like. But instead, they're dumping bodies into the ocean.
And they're talking about the cure of cancer. Just hear a clip of that.
Hey, you know something? I'm taking it as more than I thought I would.
You've been in the wrong occupation all these years.
This has got to be the answer to cancer.
Maybe that's why cancer costs so much to cure.
The way I see it, schizophrenia is the cure for cancer. cancer is probably the cure for schizophrenia.
That whole thing, it's like, it's very writerly. And I think, like, what we're talking about, like, these monologues are internal monologues. And internal monologues work in novels because it's giving you, you're getting moments. And I think, like, when you try to put all that outside, it just becomes really, every character becomes completely insane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, well, I mean, to be fair, every character in this movie is completely insane. Like, this is...
Truly.
There is nobody save, perhaps, Ryan O'Neill's father, who is so unfazed and unflappable in the face of multiple decapitations and murders that it is absolutely bananas.
Can I tell you my theory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is not real.
You think he's a Tyler Durden situation?
Yes, I do. I have a very strong theory on this. Like, when I meditated last night after this movie to think, I was like,
wait a second. Back up.
No, meditated on. Not, I didn't, I sat with the movie and I really thought about what I just saw.
You know what?
No.
I need to go into a meditative state in order to process this movie.
That's smart.
That's interesting. Yeah. I picture you like, it's like an episode of Sherlock where you go into the movie.
I went into my mind.
Your mind palace, your memory palace.
And I was thinking, I was like, I think he's not real. I think he is like this aggressive. Because Ryan O'Neill is a. Here's what I'll say in the terms of Norman Mailer, and probably even not as aggressive as Norman Mailer. He's not a man's man. So he needs a man's man to take care of the man's business. So he creates this character who can do all the things that he wants to do because no one else really sees him.
You're right. Nobody else interacts with him.
Yeah, and he.
So now I'm gonna yes and your theory into his dad lost his battle with cancer.
Yes,
and now Ryan O'Neill in his time of need, 5 days into the insanity of his wife leaving him, people starting to turn up dead, and realizing that he's being framed for murder, he needs the help of his father, who seems to be like an ex-cop or something. He has like explanations as to what happened and who shot who and how, and this one died from this and this one died from that. He seems to have knowledge, so that he takes that and populates it into, yeah, maybe.
June?
I honestly, like,
I mean, you're giving the movie way more credit.
That's the thing, like, maybe.
For originality?
Maybe. I thought at one point, what's interesting about that is I thought at one point he was going to be the killer.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, we're leading there. Like, we must be leading back to his father. I think it's definitely possible. Like, I was craving so badly I knew pretty early on that we were in a nosedive in terms of plot and that I wasn't going to be able to find my way out. So much so that when the hotel worker, like the clerk, arrived at Ryan O'Neill's house to ask if he knew this couple because they left their car in the hotel, I was relieved to just understand the scene. Understand, like, oh, a car's been left there. He's worried. He's trying to figure out where these people are. He knows he's been with them the night before. Because I was so
He's the
lost.
Only responsible person in this town.
Yes. but Paul, I think it's an interesting theory. And I also think that it gives the movie way too much credit.
If that is true, like if you said to me, like, oh, actually, that is true. It's in the book.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh, that's a more interesting story. It's just not in here. Really have to like look for it to find out.
That's going to lead into my next thing.
Great.
Let's start a book club. And this lets us be the first book. And we'll come back next week.
I will never return to this.
I will not.
It's interesting. Like, I knew we were in trouble when I saw the title. When I saw on my calendar, like, watch, I had 8 o'clock night before Thursday. How did this get made? Watch Tough Guys Don't Dance. And I was like, what's this? And then the credits started and I see Norman Mailer and I'm like, what is this now? And then it unfolded and it was just horrible. You guys,
horrible.
It was just horrible.
By the way, I hated it. I hated every minute of it.
By the way, the title of this thing, Roger Donahue, was a prize fighter who was thanked by Norman Mailer in the film because he told him an anecdote that resulted in the title. I guess Frank Costello, the Murder, Inc. boss, and his gorgeous girlfriend greet three champion boxers in the Stork Club. And Costello demands that each of these boxers dance with his woman. And then each of the boxers nervously complies. And then the last boxer, Willie Pep, goes, well, why don't you dance, Mr. Costello? And Costello goes, tough guys don't dance. And that's how it came. But also, what a bizarre story that is, too. Like, again, a cuckolding of these men. Like, you guys think you're tough? I'm going to make you dance for me and then tell you you're not so tough. I mean, this is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of hammer hits. So, in this
there's
movie.
A lot of toxic masculinity on display inside this movie, for sure.
I also just want to take a moment to talk about some of the amazing dialogue. Like, there was a thing where it was like, if you run a potato farm and you run to the potato market, you won't have enough potatoes to run a factory. I'm like, wait, what the fuck is that? Or like, where they're like, hey, did you make a puddle in your pants? Like, there was like some jazzy, like, there was some like, it's like when Back to the Future 2, when they go there, like, hey, Bojo, I'm like, oh, he created a whole language in this movie that he's like, I think.
And I know you started the show with this, but I really
we need
cannot
to get into
stress
it, yes.
enough that if you are part of the audience of this podcast that does not listen, or rather does not watch the movies ahead of time, or maybe doesn't watch the movies at all, at least seek out the clip of the oh god oh
we
man
we gotta play oh, okay, we gotta play because yes. it's too
Ryan O'Neal gets a letter from Isabella Rossellini, and she makes him promise to read it alone when he's alone, not with her present. So he goes to the beach and he reads it, and then this happens.
And by the way, I couldn't understand what the letter was actually saying. June and I rewound it three times because
her
accent is definitely playing a part of it. But then there's also like the minute she says, because I did eventually figure it out, murder them. We have to murder my husband. A bird squawks.
I wish you had shared that with me.
Well, you were asleep when I figured it out.
That would be hard.
She's saying my husband and your wife are sleeping or having an affair. Right.
Yes.
And that they're in cahoots to try and frame you or whatever there is. So we have to kill them basically before they get you.
Yeah. And but when she says like kill them, I swear a bird squawks. so you're hearing surf sand voiceover and a bird squawking over a very, like, we rewound it three times, and it was June and I both trying to listen and be like, what's happening?
My husband is having an affair with your wife. I don't think we should talk about it. As you're prepared to kill them.
Oh man! Oh god! Oh man! Oh god! Oh man! Oh god! Oh man! Oh god! Oh man! Oh god!
Oh god! Oh, oh man. Man!
Oh god!
Oh god! Oh man!
Apparently,
it's so funny
that wrecked the relationship between Ryan O'Neal and Norman Mailer, because I guess Norman Mailer, and I've read a couple things now, really loved the bad acting, and I think he edged it. Like he was like, "Yeah, more of that." Like so, he fed people into it. So like Ryan O'Neal was like, "Oh, he totally betrayed me. Like he fucked me over." And I think that like people just felt like when Norman Mailer talks about it, like there's a disdain for these actors. Like, "Oh, I thought the bad acting was so great." Like, he's a non-filmmaker. He's an author making a film, commenting on film and terrible acting. It's like, it's too many levels are at play, I think.
Oh, my God. I mean, it is.
God. Oh, man.
I want to say it's interesting to watch. It's just not.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't recommend that you go watch it, even though, there's people out there that might have a different opinion. So now it is time for second opinions.
Yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
Thank you, John Lazois. These are 5-star reviews. I didn't really find many, I shouldn't say me, Nate Kiley. By the way, also a big thank you to Avril Halley for bringing this film into our lives, or I guess a lawsuit to Avril for bringing this in. Jason and June will be, hope you have a lawyer. But Nate Kiley did some pretty good research here. There are not many earnest ones, but I'll read you this one from Roy Clark. Okay, so it is the title, a very Mailer movie, as in great, embellished with speed bumps. When classmates in the 60s were reading Salinger, I started reading Mailer, and I haven't stopped until he died last week. Happily, I've read and collected all but a few of his titles. I've enjoyed his film translation of Tough Guys Don't Dance because I've read and enjoyed and learned from the book. Learned. Now I guess it's rereading time. This film is Mailer as the book, with a strong character-driven plot drawn with the brilliance and pomposity of Mailer's famous for. Personally, I like his departure from expected forms, taking risks which might prove embarrassing, flowing or stumbling. The flow of Tough Guys is audaciously Mailer brilliant, funny on purpose or an egotistical misstep, artistically insightful or hung over and off. It's way up with acknowledged smartness, and it's an entertaining flick. It's a learning experience as well as entertainment in terms of the human experience, as well as film writing and directing. Somehow the characters seem exactly as I saw them when reading. For a double hit, try reading the book before or after viewing the movie. I've come to like reading after viewing for the imagery. It will make an impression, and an impressive one. 5 stars. Huh. And then this is from Stephen Morrow. And you know these are serious because they're using their full name. And this is it. I still maintain this has some of the best dialogue in a movie you'll ever find, such as never call an Italian small potatoes. He was way ahead of the curve in reintroducing noir again into film culture. Of course, I'm biased since I was fortunate to have worked with Norman on it. But
what?
Yeah, you are biased.
Wait, what?
But can you think of a movie of more recent vintage that has more than one memorable line? This is 1987. I would say this is the height of catchphrases, but maybe just one. I don't know. Just explosions and lots of gore. R.I.P. Norman Mailer. They don't make them like that anymore.
Can you imagine? You're Isabella Rossellini. The year prior, you are in Blue Velvet.
Yep.
Like an incredible movie that is a noir, that is an unbelievable film. And then you are in this. That's a wild back-to-back 2 years.
Yeah. The budget of this was $5 million or $10 million, depending on who you believe. Los Angeles Times says $5 million. Spy Magazine says $10 million. It grossed $858,000. The top three films of 87 are Beverly Hills Cop 2, Platoon, and Fatal Attraction. It doesn't feel like it's a contemporary of that at all. It was beaten by Running Man, Jaws, The Revenge, Over the Top, and Prom Night 2. I think we know where you both... fall on this movie about watching it, but I will say this, June, I was wrong. This is the last movie he directed, but he directed 4 films total, Maidstone, Beyond the Law, and Wild 90. This is the last movie he directed. So he was a quite a prolific filmmaker. I mean, not bad at all to get 4 out of the gate like that.
To be clear, this is bad. This is This, for me, falls into the category of I would not recommend people watch this.
Of course.
June,
would you recommend
that people watch this?
It's on YouTube, though.
Yes.
So if you want to, like, if you want to peep it, or if you want to, like, watch the oh God, oh no, or man scene, like, watch that.
Or...
To get a sense of what we're talking about, to watch some of these Southern accents.
The Southern accents are amazing. Like, the scene outside of the church. I would also say
it is worth watching.
Yeah. I had one gummy. I needed more. I think I'd be curious to see, I mean, I'll never turn it on again, but just like what 1.5, what that would have felt like.
Well, June, I think I can answer a little bit of that question for you. Not as it measures in gummies, but as it measures in versions of being impaired by that same substance. I watched this pretty stoned and it was not cool.
See, I'm watching it completely sober, and I'm learning about the dad. I'm all into it. And I got to say, we didn't talk about my favorite part of the whole movie, which is the machete on the wall.
The missing machete.
The missing machete on the wall, which is clearly the murder weapon of the decapitated people, but also underneath it, a picture of the man, the cop, holding like a bloody machete, like, ah!
And so many guns in that house. When he goes into Isabella Rossellini's house and there is like 30 guns just like at the ready, mounted on the wall, in gun racks on the floor. Like, it is like crazy. An armory. Is there, their mean, living room looks like an armory.
What we should do is, like, instead of, like, we should have our own barometer. Like, how many gummies does it take to get through some of these movies? It's sort of like the reverse of Rotten Tomatoes, where it's like, it took me two gummies. It took me three.
The only way to enjoy the, yeah, but then, you know, I agree. But then sometimes, though, like, again, like, as stoned as I was, this movie was, like, again, I wrote, I feel like I'm in an active blackout. I felt like time stopped. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, it was unsettling, to say the least.
Absolutely great. I felt like I communed with this film. I had no gummies. I mean, look, I enjoy a Camino gummy, but I had none. And
are you plugging Camino? Camino gummies?
I'm just saying that.
The Caminoan. Do they do cloning on Camino in Star Wars?
That's a different kind of. The Boba Fett gummies are very, very good. Wow.
What a ride.
Jason June, anything to plug?
I've got a couple. I mean, there's a couple of things that are up and about. I'm a voice on a new animated show on Fox called Housebroken.
Fun.
You can watch all of season one now of the animated show Invincible that I'm a voice in. It's on Amazon. A fantastic adaptation of Robert Kirkman's comic series. And then I think as of last week, June 10th on Paramount Plus, the movie Infinite, guys. If you want to see me playing a character whose only name is The Artisan,
Jason,
watch Infinite.
I am all about Infinite, as I got a special.
Do I wear eyeliner in this movie? Heavy eyeliner? Do I have a smoky eye and painted black nails? Yes, I do. Am I only referred to as The Artisan? Indeed, I am.
By the way, we should get together because recently on Black Monday, I think actually coming up this weekend on Black Monday, I am also wearing a smoky eye. And as my character gets in deep into 90s club culture or in New York City. So, you know, we're men who are not afraid to wear a smoky eye. I will say that I did get a viewing kit for Infinite that came with a whole bunch of fun stuff. You could check out my Instagram. You can see all the different fun treats and things I want to support.
I didn't get that.
Well,
that
you know,
sounds,
there you go.
Great.
You know, there you go. I have ins with the Infinite people.
I'm very excited to see that, Jason. Also, I would encourage everybody to check out another podcast. I know Paul spends a lot of time promoting his other podcast. Well, guess
Never
what?
Never promote it. I don't need to.
I have one too, and it's called The Deep Dive. It's with me and Jessica St. Clair, and you can head to anywhere you find your podcast and check it out and subscribe. And also, any of our listeners who want to join the Jane Club, head to janeclub.com. We have a lot of exciting things going on this summer. You can use our special How Did This Get Made code Jane50 for half off your first month's subscription.
It's so good. And Deep Dive is fantastic. You know, it's right up there with like the great podcasts like Unspooled or Screen Test. And so.
Wow. Wait, Screen Test? What's that? Do you have another podcast?
Yes. Look, guys, let's not get
is
into it.
Is that a podcast you host?
Do you have a third podcast?
It's a game show. Anyway.
That you host?
Yeah. Come on. Get with it, guys. It's
what
a spinoff.
What are you even talking about?
It's a spinoff podcast. A movie to game show that you don't need to know anything about. Classic films. Just you have to love films. That's all.
Oh, boy. Well, I do love.
You would be
matter.
Great.
I want to throw one more plug out to our friends in the band Mannequin Pussy.
Yes.
They have a new EP out. It is called Perfect. It is fantastic. Their music is being used in the HBO show Mayor of Easttown.
I want to watch the whole thing.
I want to watch it with you too.
Yeah, let's watch it this
So,
weekend.
You know, go and seek that out. Watch the show. Support Mannequin Pussy. They're a great band.
I will also say I know I plugged briefly Black Monday, but I will say that June is on Black Monday this season as well. So you can catch her as Corky and Keith actually work together this season in the world of religious television. But you can actually watch Screen Test and see a whole bunch of different stuff over on our Twitch channel because every Thursday, Thursday, me and Hubel host a show. Jason's been on a few times. There's been a bunch of stuff. We have a cooking show. We have music shows. It's twitch.tv/friendzone. So check that out. Super fun stuff over there. And Jason, I will send you the screen test with the George Lucas talk show guys, where they all compete in their Star Wars knowledge. And it is very, very funny. They are.
Oh, that's great.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, keep this conversation going. Did you love this movie? I know you did. You can continue that conversation in the mini episode on our Discord at discord.gg/hdtgm. And a big thank you to our super producer, Cody, our recently promoted senior head engineer, Devin Bryant.
I didn't know that. Congratulations.
Yes,
Devin
is promoted. A big thank you to April Haley for pulling all of our movies and making sure that she does the work before we have to do the work. So think of what she doesn't recommend when we get
that's
this.
That's true. That's really an important reminder.
There it is. And she needs
think
workers
about that.
Comp.
I will
she
think
needs
about,
honestly, I will think about that.
Yeah, they're so bad, she doesn't forward
I have literally had conversations where I'm like, what about this? And she's like, I tried it. It's not good. Like, she's sat through it all.
She's doing
Kylie,
the Lord's work.
With his brand new baby at home, doing the research still. Thank you, Nate, for getting on top of that. Greg T. Nelson, the ghost of Craig T. Nelson, Zach McAleese, and of course, Kyle Waldron for doing all the amazing
art. I would
art.
Love it if you just, if the actual Craig T. Nelson was involved in the production.
I would
of
love
show.
Just, he just makes fan art. He loves making fan art. Thank you all for listening. Follow us all on our social channels. We will see you next week on a mini episode. Make sure you give us a call at 619-PAULASK. That's 619-PAULASK. Thank you, everybody. See you next time on a mini. Bye for now.
Bye.